This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
When it's time to go after the biggest buck of your life, you need gear that will not only make your life easier, but that you can also depend on for years to come. Lone Wolf Custom Gear has been the leader in mobile hunting equipment for over 40 years and started out right here in Wisconsin. From inventing the climbing stick to perfecting ultralight tree stands, Lone Wolf Custom Gear continues to innovate and put the best mobile hunting equipment on the market with a ton of fantastic accessories that allow you to customize your gear exactly how you want it. Whether it be the high-end DeQuisto series sticks and stands or the affordable Patriot series, you'll have the peace of mind knowing that you're hanging off of gear that was 100% made in the USA, right here in the Midwest, in fact, and has been designed and perfected by some of the best whitetail hunters in the world. Not to mention, it has an unconditional lifetime warranty that's so good your grandkids and even great-grandkids will be able to use it when they're hunting. Go build your kit out today at lonewolfcustomgear.com.
E-scouting is the crucial first step to any great adventure, but sometimes we gotta swap the muck boots for flip-flops and the shotguns for fishing rods and get out on the water to recharge those batteries. Whether you're in search of the lunker that broke you off last summer or trying to get the family out for a day on the water, you need to have a game plan. That's where Onyx Fish comes into play. With detailed bathymetry maps, expert information, historical fisheries data, and filters that allow you to hone in on your next favorite lake for a multitude of species, this is an angler's best friend. Shoot, I'm actually planning a father-son trip to the North Woods with some buddies right now, and I already feel like I've got a game plan in place to catch more fish than the rest of those guys. And the best part is, it's easy, intuitive, and based on the same platform as our beloved Onyx Hunt app. Go check it out today and start finding your next honey hole at onxmaps.com/fish.
Turkey season is here, and when it comes time to hit the woods and chase some gobbles, you need gear that's as ready to hunt as you are. That's why I'm proud to be partnered with Huntworth Gear. This spring, I'll be running around the woods in the Durham lightweight pants, which have been my go-to pants for everything the last couple of years. They've got a waterproof seat and knee panels that keep you dry when setting up, and breathable, quick-drying fabric to keep you comfortable after a long walk through tall, dewy grass, or when you're putting on the miles looking for that lonely long beard. On top, I'll be wearing the Grayling Heat Boost hoodie if it's cold and the Camden lightweight hoodie when it's hot. And don't forget the Ames lightweight gloves with fingerless index and thumb holes that give you the dexterity you need to run those calls unimpeded all season long. Go build your kit out today at huntworthgear.com or visit the hunting section of your local Farm and Fleet or Fleet Farm to find it in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies. And one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or just looking to get out and try something new. To find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com.
If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd even venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about on this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA Chapter was formed to provide a voice to hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved works their tails off to protect public lands and access those public lands and waters.
to stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what we have going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast, which is brought to you by Lone Wolf Custom Gear. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, hope you're all doing well. I hope your June is going fantastic, even though somehow it's already half over. I'm not sure how that happened, but it has been flying by. I hope it's been good. It has been super good, super busy over here on my end. I've got a handful of stories to share with you guys today, just from the last week running all over the state and getting to do quite a bit of fishing here. But man, before that, I can't tell you how glad I am to have gotten the rain that we got this past week. Like, creeks are high and muddy, and I know there was a lot of damage that occurred in that storm, but boy, did we need it. Everything was getting dried out, and if anything else, just having a break in the heat has been absolutely wonderful since that storm rolled through. So I'm flying solo this week in today's episode. I've got some stories to tell you. I have some preseason deer projects, or I hate saying preseason deer chores because it just, I don't know. We've all seen how many articles and titles and stuff of preseason deer chores or summer deer chores, but I am going to dive into some summer deer things that I think actually have a fairly high ROI, regardless of your budget, your land situation, and just, you know, time frame, quite frankly, you know. But before we dive into that, I'm sure you guys have seen across social media, there's more BS coming out of Washington, D.C. In a number of ways, although we won't get into that. The way that we are going to get into it right now is the Department of Agriculture is currently pursuing a full repeal of the 2001 roadless rule. So the roadless rule, long story short, it protects approximately 45 million acres of national forest from the building of roads that would be used to essentially, develop the land, or, you know, could incorporate timber harvest or whatever. Basically, it would just open up these areas for having roads built through them, which once they're open to that, it's kind of the crack in the door that leads to more and more building and more stuff going in on these national forests and these public lands. So super important that we get this repeal of the roadless rule out of this bill that they're trying to push through. So be sure to contact your state congressional representative wherever you're at and let them know that we want to see the roadless rule maintained. We don't want roads built through our national forests or our public lands. You can do that by calling the Capitol switchboard at 202-224-3121, or another super easy way, as you've heard on the show plenty of times before, visit backcountryhunters.org/take_action. Scroll down there, you'll see the roadless rule issue in there, and send them a quick email. Couldn't be easier. You just put in your information, it'll make sure that it goes directly to your congressional representative, and let's get this thing nipped in the bud before it gets any further here, because last thing we want to see is more stuff going on our public lands and a reduction in our public lands. So be sure to do that. I've got all the thing there linked down in the show notes. Check that stuff out. Fire it off real quick, pause the episode, make a quick call, send an email real quick, and resume here. But in a little bit more positive news, I'm excited to announce that we do have another deer season kickoff in the works. I'm thinking right now it's going to be probably in the middle of August, Thursday. We did it, I think last year we did it like Thursday, August 7th or August 9th, I don't know, something in there. It's looking like, just with the speakers that I have been trying to line up for this event, it's looking like it might end up being Wednesday. Tentatively, don't quote me on this, but tentatively, August 12th, that's a Wednesday night. It'll probably be from 6 to 9 p.m. again. It'll be at the Great Dane in Fitchburg again. But again, none of that stuff is officially locked in yet. As soon as it is locked in, I'll be sure to let you guys know. Follow along closely on Wisconsin Sportsman social media channels there. I'll be keeping everything updated there in terms of the scheduling and process for this event and everything, but it should be super fun. I'm unbelievably stoked. Last year was so much better than I could have even imagined, and I can't wait to see some of you guys again, learn from some awesome folks who you guys have heard from on this podcast, and just talk deer. It's an awesome way for all of us to get together and learn and kind of shift our brains a little bit more into deer mode. So I'm pretty fired up for that. So again, stay tuned on the social media channels as well as just in these episodes. I'll be sure to announce as soon as we get everything locked in here. But super excited for that. That'll all be presented by Onyx as well. So huge shout out to those guys. Cannot wait for that. And yeah, just going to be a great time. But like I said at the beginning of this, I have been running around like a madman for the last week or so here. Coming off an awesome trip up to the Northwoods that I took with my dad, as well as some high school buddies and our dads, all of us, you know, grew up together and, you know, playing sports and everything. And, you know, we haven't done one of these trips since I think we were maybe freshmen in college, or maybe it was senior year, after senior year of high school, going into our freshman year of college. But it was regardless 10 years since we did one of these last. And we were very fortunate that one of our buddies ended up buying a cabin up in the kind of the Woodruff, Minocqua, like north of there kind of area. And it's on a little chain of lakes there. And it was perfect. It was absolutely fantastic. We had an awesome time. Put the beat down on some smallmouth. They were a little finicky in the afternoons there. Didn't quite get them fully dialed in for a full 24-hour, or I guess not 24-hour, but a sunrise to sunset bite window there. But the mornings were fantastic. I was fully committed to harassing these fish on the fly, and not to toot the horn of the fly fishermen of the Midwest too hard here, but I did outfish the rest of the group on my fly rod when they were chucking bait and spinners and all that other good stuff. So that's all I'll say on that front. Now, I will say that I went into this trip after doing some research on Onyx fish, which if you guys are doing a trip wherever, you know, it could be, you know, it's going to have to be in the Midwest because that's all that Onyx fish has covered right now, except for Montana. I think they just launched there as well. But if you guys have any lake plans this summer, or you're going to be poking around, maybe making a trip up north, taking the boat out, or even just, you know, buzzing around the state in the Midwest to, you know, do a little bit of fishing. I was absolutely blown away by Onyx fish in preparation for this trip in terms of the information available through their collaboration with Fishing Hotspots. Now, I can appreciate and completely relate to if you are someone who's been going to a lake for years and you've spent all your time learning the honey holes and where the good spots are and all that good stuff. I hear you. I feel you. And I felt an equal amount of frustration when Trout Routes launched, right? Now, we can also all appreciate and have to remember that just because we had these tools at our disposal and they're maybe highlighting certain spots that otherwise weren't highlighted, right? It doesn't tell you how to fish them. You still have to figure out where the fish are as you're, you know, going to these spots and all that. Luckily, we figured them out. But I will say Onyx fish made the pre-scouting process, and when we were meeting back, you know, for lunch and stuff back at the cabin and kind of deciding where we were going to go for the afternoon, where we wanted to explore, Onyx fish was so invaluable in just having an idea of what's the shoreline look like. Is it rocky? Is it gravel? Is it sandy? Is it weedy? Is it mucky? What's going on there?
Not to mention, there are some features on there on certain lakes, not all of them, where you're going to see, you know, I guess a pin dropped in there that will say, oh, on this shoreline or in these bays, thanks to fishing hotspots, there's there is a high abundance of summer smallmouth in here. They tend to be, you know, congregated off of these gravelly points or these rocky points or whatever it was. And I can confirm that it was accurate. Now, again, we had to kind of take their temperature and figure out what kind of a presentation they wanted and what exactly they were looking for, and, you know, how we were just going to target those fish. And I know darn well that we barely scratched the surface of the fish that were in there in actually figuring out what was going on. But regardless, it helped us get on fish. It helped us develop a plan for identifying where we were going to go the next day and in the mornings and all that sort of stuff, and just keep tabs on where we were finding stuff. So that's all to say, when I was scouting these lakes, I learned that there was a pretty high abundance of, not giant, but a higher abundance of muskie in these lakes. Now, I've said it on the show before, my goal for 2026 is still, unfortunately, spoiler alert, to catch a muskie on the fly. So I popped into Muskie Fool before we went up there. Those guys set me up with a couple of flies. I got a new reel in there and just talked with them about, you know, colors and, you know, different fly presentations and stuff like that for these fish, for both muskie and smallmouth. So huge shout out to those guys. But I rigged up the 10 weight, threw a big yellow Buford on the front of it, and I went in there fully prepared to commit to muskie. Now I got distracted, of course, as one does when they see smallmouth crash and bait up on the rocks, and so I spent more time with my 7 weight in hand than I did with the 10 weight, and it turned out that it didn't even matter, because about 45 minutes into our first morning, I caught like a perch on a circus peanut streamer. It's kind of like a crayfish imitation. Somehow caught a perch on that, which is really weird, but at least I can check another species on the fly off there. And then I saw smallmouth crash off the rocks, threw in there a couple casts later, and was able to pick that fish up. Super stoked. Nice, probably 16-inch smallie. Really good start to the trip there. And then we kind of troll around this island. We do 2 loops and we go over to the next island. I realize, oh, shoot, it gets really like kind of pencil reedy in here. Fairly shallow. I don't know. My dad, who was in the back of the boat, was running a handful of different things. He had some spinners. He was throwing some little like stick bait Rapalas and stuff like that. And I thought, you know what? It's weedy in here. There's smallmouth. You know, I've been doing a little bit of research and all that on just like kind of what people are getting smallies on. Why don't you throw this little inline spinner on? It's like a little big, but I think it'll be fine. It's got a black blade and a chartreuse blade and just like a black bucktail. Like, I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be good. It'll put out vibration. We'll attract some fish. If anything, it's just like a good prospecting, kind of a searching lure, right? And about 5 minutes after he switched, we're rounding the backside of this island and I hear Dad go, oh, I got one. And I was like, all right, sweet. Doesn't look like it's too far away. He starts reeling. This thing's pulling drag. I'm like, you on weeds? Or he's like, no, I don't think I'm on weeds. This thing's just pulling. I'm like, oh, great. And as soon as it comes up, I say to myself, well, I'll be damned. That's a muskie. Son of a gun. Okay, great. Awesome. So we get the thing netted. Both of us are high-fiving. We're super stoked. And 45 minutes into the trip, Dad's got a muskie on the board. Not a giant, but, you know, like, we didn't get a tape on anything while we were up there, but I would probably put it, you know, like 24 to 28 or so, just a fun fighting fish. And so that was absolutely awesome. So we're, you know, sending pictures to the group and everything. And it was just super cool that he was able to get that fish. That was his first fish of the trip. And we poked around a little bit more, found a few more smallies, and went over to one of the spots on Onyx Fish that had been indicated to be a good smallmouth spot, kind of a series of bays and gravelly points. And got a couple smallies in there, had some really cool follows and stuff. Caught a couple pike. I caught one hammer bluegill that ate like a 4-inch streamer, which is kind of weird. And then we're getting ready to go back for lunch. And we're just kind of finishing trolling through the backside of this bay, about to round this point, and Dad gets another fish. I'm like, all right, cool, awesome. Me expecting a smallmouth, grab the net, get over there, and big blow up, splash next to the boat. And I look down and I say, no freaking way, that's another muskie. And lo and behold, we get this sucker up in the net, and it is another muskie, a couple inches bigger than the one that he got earlier in the morning. And yeah, Dad kicked off that trip with two solid muskies before noon, and I didn't get a follow. I didn't get a look. I didn't get anything the rest of the trip while I was, I got a bunch of smallmouth, but I didn't get any more. I didn't get any musky action whatsoever. I'll put it that way. So super stoked for Dad on that. That was a really cool way to start the trip. And the rest of the group, I think we picked up some walleye. I ended up missing. Like I could see the thing kind of sneaking up behind my fly. And like, I didn't know what it was at first. And the thing sucked it in, and then I trout set like an idiot and yanked the fly right out of its mouth rather than strip setting. And that would have been probably a 19, maybe 20 plus inch walleye there, but watched him swim away. So that was kind of a bummer. But we ran around the rest of the day, the rest of the weekend, and found fish again the next morning, a couple nice ones, weird, kind of cool eats off of like a really big open sand flat. Kind of thought to myself about Kyle Zimple from Black Earth Anglings, smallmouth kind of oasis approach, like in the Wisconsin River being, you know, super sandy, and there's a lot of water, but not all of it's good. And so you've got to figure out like what are these smallmouth relating to? And as we were trolling around this really open, super clear sandy bay, there were some down trees, that were submerged, you know, in a couple feet of water. And I thought to myself, like, if there is a smallmouth, it's going to be right super tight to those trees. And sure enough, we started pulling smallmouth out of basically what looked like a desert. They were glued right to the sides of these tree trunks and submerged logs and all that kind of stuff. So super cool, really fun trip. That was my first Northwoods trip in, well, I guess, you know, Northwoods Lake trip, I'll say, because I've been going up to fish the Menominee the past couple of springs and didn't work out this year. But this was an awesome, super close substitute. And then I came home, and last Wednesday, right before all that rain hit, every June, my good buddy Craig Amaker from Madison Fly Fishing, he and I try to get out and do a little prospecting float of the lower Wisconsin River. And we put in below Sauk and did ourselves a nice little float and just were kind of checking things out, seeing what the water levels were at. At the time, things were super, super low, like the lowest I've ever seen the Wisconsin in that section. And we struggled at first and then kind of started getting into some more rocky bank type stuff, pulled a couple fish off. It wasn't anything crazy. Found a pile of gar sitting in those shallow sand flats and a bunch of quillback and carp and stuff. But the smallmouth were kind of tough to come by a little bit. And so we ended up getting into them, found them off some breaks and everything. I had one, I switched flies and I was just trying to get the darn thing wet. And I, right next to the boat, was just kind of slapping it in the water and just twitching it, trying to get the thing to saturate so I didn't have to cast a totally dry streamer and try and sink it on my first couple of casts and all that before we went to the next spot. And after I slapped it in on this weird wide open sand flat, I slapped the streamer in the water, and with no line out of the tip of my rod, really, I'm just kind of banging this thing along, trying to just get it soaking wet, and had a nice 15 inch smallie blow up on that right next to the boat, which was super random, but very cool. And then we got into another rocky shoreline that was a little harder to access, a little bit shallower water to get back to it. And those fish were just in there thick. And we threw a bunch of minnow patterns the entire time. We didn't really do any top water fishing or anything, but didn't really need to either. But man, I mean, I got broke off by one fish that as soon as my fly hit the water and I gave it one strip, this thing just erupted on it and snapped me off immediately on 12 pound fluoro. So that was pretty cool. I mean, we probably pulled between 8 and 10 fish off of this bank. Kyle Zimple, who I mentioned earlier, was guiding that day. We saw him pick up his clients and buzz down river. And, you know, he was within eyesight for most of the day. And then as we got further down kind of towards where we're going to take out. We finish this one shoreline and then we're like, you know, let's hit this one break. We'll hit this other shoreline and then there's a creek mouth and then we'll go down to the takeout further and, you know, we'll finish it up that way. As we're finishing up this rocky shoreline, we hear Kyle's boat. We see him come shooting back up river just in time for us to come around the bend and see a wall of super dark clouds, which we knew were coming, but we didn't know they were here just yet. We saw them in the distance. We're like, all right, you know what? Let's do one last spot and then we'll call it. Now, got out, hopped on this bar. We're throwing in there for a little bit. Craig caught a smallmouth, you know, maybe after a couple of minutes or so. And as he released it, I saw a flash of lightning in the distance. I said, hey, buddy, probably time to go. And he's like, yep, absolutely. Let's get the heck out of here. Get off the water. And thank goodness we did that when we did, because we paddled all the way down. We got to the takeout. And as we beached the canoe, the wind started picking up. The rain wasn't quite there yet, but like you could feel that pressure change, that something bad was coming down the pike. So we immediately scramble out of there. I'd broken down the rods and everything and throw them in our cases while we were paddling down, and then got out, just started grabbing all the stuff that we could and make it as few trips as possible, and ran up to the top, threw our stuff by the top of the lot there by the edge of it. And then Craig went to grab the car, whipped back around so we could start loading. And I lifted the cooler out of Craig's canoe, which was like an old Winona Kevlar. It weighs like 40 some pounds, super, super light canoe. And as I lifted the cooler, which maybe weighed 20-ish, maybe 30 pounds, the wind picked up, the canoe just sweeps sideways. I'm like, oh, shoot. 40-some pound canoe is not so great when you've got bombing winds now. So I grabbed the canoe, pulled it up a little bit further so at least on land, nothing was in the water, and then drug the cooler up. And as soon as I got the cooler up there and Craig whipped around at the car, started throwing stuff in, it just let loose. And the wind was going nuts to the point where we had trees like snapping in half and branches falling all around us. We were just like, you know what? A boat's just a boat. We got to get the heck out of here right now and at least get somewhere safe. So we kind of drove down the road. We were a little bit more protected from the wind and waited it out for about half an hour or so until things kind of let up, and then got back and ended up being a fun day. Nonetheless, we caught a bunch of fish, had a great time, but there's something about when he and I go fishing and do our little prospecting floats every year that we get caught in some crazy conditions that have us questioning why we do it every time. But super fun day. Awesome to, you know, but do a little bit of buddy fishing with Craig and everything. And yeah, it was just a great time. After that, I had brought my bow with me because I wanted to drop it off over at the Wilderness in Sauk and have those guys take a gander at things and just get everything tuned up, which I guess is kind of a good segue into our preseason, I don't know, our preseason deer chores or whatever we want to call them, our deer season prep. We'll put it that way. This was the first step in that for me. I've done it in the past, and you know, I always tell folks, get your bow tuned now. So I dropped my bow off, brought it in, and to my surprise, they were like, well, do you just want to hang out real quick? Like, do you have time to, like, let's shoot it a little bit and, you know, we'll paper tune it and all that and just, you know, shoot it through paper, see what's going on. I shot my first arrow. The guy kind of looks at me. He's like, you're going to shoot more arrows, but based off of that, you're shooting just about perfect right now. So I was kind of surprised to hear that, just especially, you know, this is the first time I've taken this new bow in for a tune-up, first time taking a bow from this decade in for a tune-up, I should say, as well. And I was very, very, very surprised to learn that after two seasons, everything was still totally golden. Like, I had a tiny bit of peep twist that we fixed right up, And got a handful of new arrows to get ready for the Beast Mode Archery Challenge out at Tyrol, which is coming up July 17th, 18th, and 19th, I believe. That'll be out at Tyrol Basin. It's an awesome 3D shoot, which if you were looking to do some 3D archery, definitely check that out. Brian's an awesome dude. He's been on the show before, and he puts on an awesome 3D archery shoot out there. Super fun, running up and down the hills. Simulates a lot of like Western, and even if you're a bluff country hunter, Midwestern hill type situations, as well as some, you know, flatter, wide open savanna type stuff. And even some closer range, like more whitetail geared situations and stuff. So definitely mark your calendar for that. Go register. I think that's filling up pretty darn quick. So you're going to want to get on that list fairly quickly. I think the plan right now is I'm shooting for Sunday. I like going there Sunday just after the crowd goes through, and you kind of have the course to yourself. So I'm hoping to get out there for that. But back to my story. Popped into the bow shop. Everything checked out great, aside from that little bit of peep twist. Had him cut some arrows for me so that I can lose them at the Beast Mode Archery Challenge. And then as he was doing that, my mind began to wander as I thought of, well, what could I upgrade this season? Does anything need to be upgraded? I don't know. And I happened to do a little bit of strolling around and found myself looking at some new releases. Now, I've shot a super old, super cheap TrueFire Index release that is spring loaded, which I learned is not a great thing, because it's just mechanically, there's so much more travel, there's so much more crunch, there's so much more play in these releases, apparently. I thought, you know what? I've seen so many people talk about these thumb button releases. Why don't I at least give it a shot, right? Worst case scenario, I hate it and I don't get anything. But the prices were pretty reasonable compared to a lot of them that, you know, you start looking down the rabbit holes of, you know, if you're like me, you don't want to buy a piece of crap. And so you look up, you know, best thumb button archery releases or whatever it may be, right? And unfortunately, those tend to come back usually in the like $300-ish dollar price range. And then when you're looking at those, and then they've got the like, oh, best budget option, and you see one for $150 or $120 or whatever, it makes you kind of start to question like, ooh, what's wrong with that one that it's so cheap? And clearly it's not, you know, it didn't make the best of the best, but it's still on the list. I don't know, like maybe, and it just gets in your head, right? Consumerism at its finest. And so I thought, you know what? There's a $140 thumb button here. Why don't I at least ask if I can shoot it a little bit?
Hey guys, I just wanted to take a quick sec to tell you about Lone Wolf Custom Gear. Lone Wolf Custom Gear is as good as it gets when it comes to mobile hunting equipment. Whether you're a saddle or stand guy, public land or private, Lone Wolf Custom Gear has a set of sticks, a stand, a camera arm, and any number of accessories to get you closer to your target buck. To make it even better, everything is 100% USA sourced and made right here in the Midwest. And it's even assembled right across the river in Iowa by hunters who love chasing deer just as much as you do. To build your kit today, go visit lonewolfcustomgear.com. Now, let's get back to the episode.
So I did, and I shot it a couple times, got kind of a feel for it. Very, very, very different than the Index release, obviously. But as this guy was kind of, Eric was his name, the bow shop owner, the bow shop employee over there, he was kind of coaching me on how to use it and how, you know, how to, where your fingers need to be, where, you know, you should be kind of squeezing with this thing, adjusting your anchor point, all that good stuff. And maybe I'm a sucker, but I was shooting pretty dang good when I did the stuff that he told him, or that he told me, right? And long story short, I left with a half a dozen new arrows and a new thumb button archer release. So I've been tinkering with that so far this week, shooting a few arrows in the evenings and all that, knocking the rust off, which I needed to do desperately. And it's felt good. Like it feels, I don't know, as soon as the bow comes out, the brain starts to like shift into deer mode a little bit and whitetail mode, and it feels good. I don't know how else to say it. It just feels good. I think I'm starting to round the corner and be ready for deer season this year. I'm starting to get excited. I'm starting to look at properties and think about what's going to happen, what's going on. I'm just fired up. Now, obviously it's June, and one of the things I have to remind myself, and I do this, you know, with trout, with turkeys, with everything else, is like deer season in particular is a marathon, not a sprint, which is why I am very begrudging about the summer deer chore episodes, the summer deer chore articles, the June deer project, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, that's starting so early, right? Because I think everybody just gets burned out from that kind of stuff. But there is a lot of stuff that should be done this time of year in order to just kind of allow you to, I don't want to say take your foot off the gas, but just not be scrambling come the end of August or that first week of September when deer season's right around the corner. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh crap, I got to do all this stuff. Or, you know, I'm trying to get my act together to like, oh, this piece of gear doesn't work, whatever it is. And so I guess right now I think is kind of a good time for a little bit of a reset as we sort of exit turkey season, we exit the postseason scouting time of year, right? And where our brains start to shift into preseason mode, right? So like preseason mode for right now, I've been really focused on trying to get back into a routine after turkey season kind of threw a massive wrench into any semblance of my routine, right? So I've been focusing on, number one, getting back in the gym and getting everything sorted out. You know what I mean? Like, I may have talked about it before, but I've had a lot of back issues ever since I was 16. I cracked my pelvis snowboarding when I was a sophomore in high school, and I didn't realize that it was cracked until a year and a half later when I was just surprised, continually having back issues. Went to a chiropractor that did an x-ray and quickly asked, oh, when did you break your pelvis? And I was like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, there's a crack that goes down all the way through your pelvis, and your tailbone, which is supposed to be coming straight down, is coming off to the left. I'm like, oh, weird. Probably not great, but it's like, is there anything we can do? And like, no, it's all healed. So I've been dealing with back issues for a long time. And so when I was young, I had these injuries and didn't know that I had them. I thought it was like bruised tailbone, whatever. And so being serious about football, I started lifting just as heavy as I was. I mean, it was February when that happened. And so it's prime peak football weight room season. So I was deadlifting and squatting and doing all that fun stuff that puts a little bit of tension and strain on your back. I was doing that with a great deal of pain. And that's something that I've dealt with for years since. And so last year, I really tried to get all that sorted out. And I think I went about it the wrong way. It was sort of uninformed. And I thought, if I lower the weight, which, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, and I'm by no means any sort of a health or a fitness guru. I'm just sharing what's been working for me so far this year. But last year I tried, you know, I thought I wanted to get back into some of those major lifts, like your deadlifts, your cleans, not so much, but, you know, a little bit of cleans, front squat, back squat, RDLs, all that good stuff that basically just like helps build total body power, right? I just wanted to feel strong, like I could drag a deer out when I needed to. I wasn't going to like jack up my back or do anything goofy. And so I started doing that. And I did a lot of low weight, high rep type stuff in hopes of strengthening my back over time and doing all sorts of stuff like that. What I've transitioned to doing, because I still injured my back last year, I had issues this past winter and everything. What I was is a little counterintuitive, but what I've found works very well is doing more sets with fewer reps and a little bit higher weight that forces you to really lock in that lower back, your core, your, you know, keeping your chest up, you know, all that good stuff. And kind of created a new program and everything for myself. And my back feels better than it has felt in years. So I'm hoping that that continues. But all that's to say, getting into the routine now in preparation for shit to hit the fan come September, October, especially November, is just a really good thing to be doing right now. So that's what I've been doing. The same thing goes with archery. You know, I'm just not a big long distance shooter personally. Like for me, I can't get over that psychological hurdle. And I don't know if that's something any of you out there can relate to, but I know we all see videos of folks shooting, you know, oh, if I'm planning to shoot a doe at or a deer at 25 yards or something, I'm going to shoot at 50 so that when he's at 25, it looks, you know, insanely close. It looks so much closer. For me, that just doesn't work because I am, maybe you can relate, not the best shot at 50 yards. I'm just not. And I don't know if it's a visual thing. I think I'm just not a great shot across the board. That's what I'm slowly figuring out and something that I'm working on. Don't get me wrong, but I like repeatability and shooting in situations that I'm going to be shooting deer in, right? So I shoot off the back deck at 25 yards or off the back deck at 15 yards or 7 yards or 8 yards, sometimes out to 35, if, you know, I'm trying to simulate maybe a follow-up shot or something. But I do it in a controlled manner where, like, I to an extent, I'm setting myself up for success, right? Because I, as soon as I start missing the target, or as soon as I start shooting really big, wild groups, I get in my head and I start second-guessing my process, start second-guessing my own shooting. But if I'm drilling holes at 25 to 35 yards, I'm super happy. Because for the way I hunt, in the places that I hunt, if I can put one, you know, in a baseball-sized group at that distance, I'm golden. I'm super happy with that. So kind of, you know, across the board in the gym as well as with the bow right now, I'm really focusing on quality reps rather than quantity, right? And on top of that, as I mentioned, I'm not a great shot across the board. That extends to the firearms as well. Now, it's one thing when you're shotgunning and you're kind of in motion and you're really just kind of not slapping the trigger, but it's a less smooth process than, or a less controlled process, I should say. Now, maybe there's a much better shotgunner out there who's laughing, saying, dude, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, which you are correct, my friend. So at least the way I shoot ducks or pheasants or whatever, I don't think I'm squeezing the trigger super smooth and in a hyper-controlled manner, you know, doing the Joel Turner type shot process like we do with our bows or anything. But I do try to do that with my rifle. And I noticed the past couple of years that I've been just getting a little twitchy, a little inconsistent with my firing. And I'm going to grab either a 22 or honestly, even just a Red Ryder BB gun, or probably not a Red Ryder, but I'll get like, you know, a cheapo Crossman or something like that, that I can throw pellets or BBs in or something. And my plan for the summer is honestly just to do some plinking, like, and just get automatic with it, with something that there's no recoil. There's no, I mean, you can get a thing of BBs for what, $6-7 or something. Got plenty of recycling you know, plink at and everything. But just get reps in different positions with different, you know, situations and all that. And same kind of thing as with the bow. Just try and get quality reps. Doesn't have to be anything serious. Doesn't have to be any crazy distance, but just really dial in the process so that when I do inevitably grab the 243 out of the gun locker, it's automatic. You know, I've fired, I don't know how many rounds through that thing. And a big part of that, I think, is I haven't been a big shooter for many, many years. I've never really gotten into it. It's usually been I'll shoot half a box in June or July just to make sure it's on. And then I'll shoot again maybe September or so just to make sure it's on, or just before the deer season or the 9-day opener. And that's pretty much the extent of it, right? But I don't do a whole lot of firearm practice, which is something that I'm going to work on this year. So I'm super excited for that, just from the standpoint of, again, getting a little bit more quality reps and just, I mean, reps in general, pulling the trigger while looking down the sights rather than looking through my peep sight and, you know, hovering the pin, you know what I mean? So that's one of the things that I'm doing just in terms of routine and kind of like physical and mental preparation for this upcoming fall. Next thing that's on the list that I haven't been doing, but you know, it's on the list whenever I get time, is going to be some preseason scouting. Now, we just got a pile of rain and everything's up. Creeks are blown out. Swamps are full. All the rivers are up right now. Right now, like this week, where we've got more rain coming towards the end of it, now is a great, great time to go and keep tabs on any of your properties that have a river or a lake or a pond or a marsh or anything in there so that you can have an idea of, okay, if I get, not that it's likely, but if I get 3 inches of rain on October 24th or something like that, what is that going to do to this area? How long does it, like, you know, how bad does the water level rise? How dangerous does it get if it's a river? Like, does it get cranking fast? Does it get super muddy and just invisible? You can't see through it. If it's a marsh, is that one spot that was knee deep, is that now waist deep? And I'm going to have to pack waders or something like that. And on top of that, pay attention in the coming days to how long does it take for that water level to drop back to normal and kind of re-situate itself at a normal level. You know what I mean? So keep tabs on that sort of stuff. That's one of the biggest things of scouting. Like summer scouting in particular, like we've talked about it. I do most of my in-wood scouting in the fall and in the winter during later season hunts and then in the spring during turkey season if I still have questions on stuff. But summertime, it's a lot of just, I want to see what things look like going into the season. So big part of that is, what do the rivers, lakes, ponds, and marshes look like? In addition to that, going in and getting an idea of what are the early season trails looking like. If I'm somebody who's going to hunt an opener, my hope is that, you know, we're going to see plenty of people going in there either on opener or at the beginning of the season or a week before the season to hang stands or to check on things or do whatever. Do their preseason scouting, right? But get in there now and get an idea of where deer bedding, if you're jumping deer, like is it in, I can picture one public piece where early season, the deer like to bed right down by this little creek. There's like a drainage system that kind of leads down and there's, it's not a deep creek or anything, but it's just enough to hold some water. There might be a spring head up there, but the water in there is cold and it's just before it hits the river. And deer love sitting down there. So keeping tabs on stuff like that, and especially looking for any scrape that's still open right now. Those I'm really, really keying in on because that's kind of my point zero of if I'm going to go back to this property early season in November, whenever, where are the primary scrapes, right? So I'm keeping tabs on those. I'm dropping a pin. And then from there, maybe I'll go in and I'll scout a little bit, but to be honest, scouting this time of year can really suck. Although this year or this week, it's kind of cool. So maybe get after it a little bit. But from there, I'm kind of zooming out and thinking like, okay, what are my theories that I'm going to develop? What benches are nearby that I think maybe they're going to bet on? Is there like a good looking point? How can I foresee deer traveling through this area? And you know, a lot of times too, I'll drop pins. And especially on hub scrapes where there's maybe multiple trails leading to this one spot. And I do this in pinch points, really any sort of a hub anyways. But I will do the little line distance feature and I will just draw a line in the direction of each trail essentially. And at least gives me an idea of, okay, here's the three directions or the four directions or whatever that deer are coming to this point from. And it just helps me keep an idea of, okay, I need to be cognizant when I access this, not to cross this trail or not to come in from this side. Or I know that occasionally there's a trail that, you know, maybe it wasn't as beat down, but there is a trail that leads from a certain direction that I'm going to have to keep in the back of my mind when I access or when I set up, or depending on different wind conditions or thermal conditions, right? Keep tabs on that. And then if you're into food sources and stuff like that, which we all should be, I'm driving around, I'm looking at what crops are in all the fields surrounding a public piece, or if it's a private piece I've got permission on, what am I dealing with this year? Is it going to be a bean field that might be a better early season attractor, or is it going to be corn that is going to be maybe a big ocean and big safe space for the deer when it's still standing? And am I going to have my work cut out for me like I did last year when I was hunting Iowa? You know, like this one property I was on, they didn't pick until November 1st, November 2nd, something like that. I don't think they were done till November 6th. And by then, I'd beaten my head against a wall trying to figure out where these deer were at in the limited timber that was there, that I ended up blowing out the timber rather than figuring out what these deer were doing, because they just had so much corn that they could just bed in, walk around in, travel through, all that good stuff. So it helps you develop a plan in that way as well. On top of that, if you're on private, right now is a great time to be doing some of that limb work, you know, cutting some of those trees off, even though we say, like, you know, you don't want to do it now because you'll over prune. If you're like me and last season you dropped a bunch of pins and you made notes of, okay, this tree right here needs a certain branch lopped off, which in the fall, I do that a ton when I know that something should be a good spot, but I can't hunt it because there's a tree in the way or a branch in the way. I don't have a shooting lane. I've got several trees on that same farm in Iowa that for future use, I know need to be cut. And when the time comes, I'll get back in there and lop those branches off and get back to it. But take notes in the OnX app, attach photos to your pins, especially if it's like a maintenance pin. A lot of times I'll like even color code my maintenance pins. Like I'll do those in brown just because it's like, I don't know, I don't have, for whatever reason, I don't use brown pins a whole lot. So I'll do that. And then last but not least, like invasive removal is a high one on my list for this summer, even though it sucks, but I'm going to take advantage of this summer. I don't want to call it a cold front, but these cooler temps we've got this week and next week, I'm going to try to get in there, cut up some honeysuckle, get it out there, spray the stumps, and hopefully, if all goes well, we'll be able to thin that out a little bit and have a little bit more native growth in the timber out there. Last but not least, on the list of our preseason deer chores here, I hate saying that. Sorry, I know I keep making that joke, but regardless, the last thing on my list is getting hunting permission sorted out now. So many people that I've talked to last year were saying that, like, I'd ask them mid-July or late July, and folks were saying, oh, shoot, you know, I already gave permission to so-and-so back, you know, the first week of July. Like they literally, I don't know, for whatever reason, they all gave me information that, I guess, with a timeline of when people were given permission to, or when they asked. Now, it seems early, but in the middle of June, in late June, get a jump on it so that you at least have your yeses, your nos, and your maybes lined up for the year to come. That's going to give you more time to be that guy who's knocking on doors in July to ask for permission. You know, it's going to, you'll be right in there with everybody else, but you'll have a jump on them, at least on your number one properties and your number two properties, right? So do all the usual stuff when knocking on doors. I like to circle back to properties that I've had turkey hunting permission on, and just, you know, especially if it's one that is one thing, if it's, you know, some of them are a little more open, a little less deery, a little bit better for turkeys. But, you know, if it's one that's, you're finding sheds or you're seeing some cattle paths cut through on the hillside and everything, or you're jumping does and stuff while you're out there, a lot of times I'll circle back there. Cause if anything, it's just a good spot to go for an antlerless hunt, right? Or worst case scenario, you know, maybe the public that you were planning to hit is just being overrun with pressure or something, you know, so many crazy things can happen throughout the course of a fall. It's better to have permission and not need it than it is to need it and not have it, right? So when I'm knocking on doors, I do all the usual stuff. Now, before I do that, it's always starting with OnX. I'll pick out a couple of properties. Usually I'm dropping pins while I drive around in the spring or even last fall and everything. And if it's somebody new, not to be a creep, but I'll try and find them on Facebook or social media just to get an idea of like, okay, does this person, is their profile picture a big gripping grin? Or is it, you know, do they have pictures, whatever, with their grandkids or, you know, their own kids or somebody else on their farm or their property, you know, holding a deer or a turkey or something like that, just to give myself kind of, if anything, a background on them, but also a little bit of a clue of like, what should I really expect here? Like, I'm not going to get too excited, but you never know. So I start there. On top of that, you know, maybe it's Brian Dombrowski said last year during our deer season kickoff that he'll look at like real estate listings and Zillow listings in that neighborhood to see if there are buck mounts on the wall. So he gets an idea of age class as well as genetics there. Now, if you want to go that far, more power to you, but just to figure out, throw that in there at least. When I'm going on, you know, doing door knocking and stuff like that, I always like to dress normally and especially try and not dress up, but I like to look more presentable. I don't like knocking on doors in camo or in my boots or like in anything like that. I try and wear jeans and a nice t-shirt, or, you know, if I'm coming from the office or something, I'll wear whatever I wore to work, just looking put together. Like, I don't look like some sort of a rascal trying to run around your property, right? With me, I'm always bringing a typed out letter so that if I do need to, you know, say that nobody's home or whatever, and I'm not going to be back in that area for a while, I'll just drop it in the mailbox. And when I do that, I do not address it to them. Like, I don't write their full address. Obviously, there's no stamp or anything on there, but I will just write Mr. and Mrs. Smith or what, you know, whatever the name is, right? And I'll put that on there so it seems like, you know, they can kind of infer from that, like, oh, this person literally dropped it in my mailbox. They dropped by the house. Hopefully, I would assume that they were trying to knock on the door, whatever it may be. But with that, typed out letter, a little bit about yourself, the type of hunting you do. So if you're a bow hunter, say that you're hoping to bow hunt, like, be specific, give them all the information that you're hoping to all the information for your plans, right? Within reason. Tell them about yourself. Tell them what you do for work. Tell them where you're from. That's a big one. Tell them what time of year you're hoping to be there. And, you know, because you never know. Some people are just 9-day hunters. Some people are diehard bow hunters and then they don't gun hunt. Or sometimes the muzzleloader season's wide open, right? So give them a bunch of information as you can. I always attach a business card with me. I'll stick it in an envelope with my letter. If you can drive by a couple of nights, again, not being a creep, not being a stalker, but like if you've driven through the area before and you're scouting private land in that way, if you can gather information and maybe drop a pin of like, yeah, you know, I drove by a couple of nights ago and I saw a bunch of deer back, you know, in this back field corner here. I just wondered, you know, hey, is there any chance you guys ever let somebody hunt? That's the big thing. Like, I'm never asking for direct, like, at least off the bat, like, can I hunt your property? I always open with, do you guys ever let people hunt? And then if so, would you potentially be open to me sneaking out here for, sneak's the wrong word, but coming out for a couple of hunts this deer season? You know, I always assure them I never use a permanent set. Everything I hunt with is mobile. And so I'm not going to leave anything out on your property. I won't even leave trail cameras if that's something that you're worried about. But if you're open to it, you know, I might hang one or two and I'll be sure to let you know exactly where they're at. Assure them that you're going to be transparent with them, that you're going to be a good steward of their land, right? Because after all, they are the ones who are giving you permission to hunt and chase animals with a deadly weapon on their property, right? On top of that, you know, obviously assure them, you know, especially if you've been hunting for quite a while, like, and say, like, you know, I've been hunting for a long time, you know, I'm very experienced, I'm, you know, always extremely safe. So if you've had permission on other properties before, be sure to reference that. Say, like, I've, you know, had permission on properties before, and unfortunately I moved out of the area, or, you know, that property changed landowners or something like that. But I have a very good history with, you know, hunting on other people's property. I always shut the gates. I never climb a fence. I never, you know, do anything. I always try to make sure people know if I see, you know, a downed tree or something near a fence line, or if I see litter or whatever, I pick it up and I bring it with me, or, you know, all that good stuff, just to assure them that you're going to be a good steward of their land. But having that reference of a specific spot, especially like I'm wondering, oh, you've got 400 acres. Well, is there any chance I'm really interested in hunting that one little sliver that's on the backside of the river? Is there any chance like you'd be potentially open to me just hunting that area, or at least something like that to get your foot in the door? And, you know, as you're talking to them, ask questions, ask them, you know, try and get to know them. When do you hunt? Do you hunt at all? Are there other people who hunt out here? Would it be okay if I were to hunt, you know, only for muzzleloader or only for bow or only for antler this season? Same kind of stuff there. And if they get, like, you get a no, always be respectful. Always back off. Like, I never want to push a landowner or anything like that and then leave a bad taste in their mouth. For even if I don't get to hunt there, if the next guy comes knocking, if I was a jerk, the answer for that guy is definitely going to be a no, because he's already got a bad, bad taste in his mouth from other hunters. But then, you know, always just chat with them. I like to, you know, and so say like, you know, hey, no problem at all. Totally get it. You know, sure, from what I've seen, it sure looks like there's a heck of a lot of good deer running around though. Like, have you guys gotten any big ones recently? Have you guys had any luck this season or last year or anything like that? And a lot of, you know, just get more information. And then of course, if the answer is a firm no, then say like, hey, you know, no problem. Like, I'm hunting public around here anyways, but I just figured if I could, you know, potentially hunt around here for a day or two, or have this spot, you know, as a backup or something like that, you know, that would, I would just appreciate that a ton. And then of course, ask if they know any neighbors nearby that they, you know, if the answer is no here, say, hey, no problem. Is there anybody down the road that you might, you know, think might let people hunt on their place, or that you would recommend that I ask? Get that information and, you know, just be cordial, right, at the end of the day. And, you know, be sure to tell them, you know, that you appreciate their time, you appreciate the consideration, and move on. Get on to the next spot, right? Just be a good steward of land. Be a good representative of the hunting community and all that, right? So to recap here a little bit of our big list of June deer chores that will guarantee a big buck come November. I don't know. Number one, right now, get in the gym, get shooting the bow, get some routine cooking right now. Get your tinkering out of the way right now. Don't be messing with stuff in early September and then have something go wrong. If you're gonna be like me and you're gonna play around and see if you like shooting a thumb button, do it now so that you've got a couple months to decide if you hate it or not, right? Get your permission properties lined up so that you have that done out of the way right off the bat. You can develop a plan for fall now, so you're not scrambling come October, right? Or a week before your trip. From there, if you're a private land person, get the habitat work done, get the food plots in, all that good stuff. Cut those limbs if you haven't done it already. Get that stuff knocked out. And last but not least, just enjoy everything that summer is and has to offer, right? Take the boat out, go fishing with the kids, go for hikes, go camping, do all the stuff that's non-hunting related. Just do it, because it's going to make you enjoy the woods and the grind that is deer season. It's going to make you enjoy it that much better. Soak this time of year up. Remember, this is a marathon, not a sprint, as we head into deer season. And yeah, just enjoy it, right? That's what we're here to do. We want to enjoy the natural resources here in Wisconsin as best we can. Or out of state, you know, if you're gonna do some exploring, go do it, right? But just soak it all up, stop along the way, check things out. I don't know, just enjoy it. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Take your time, get after it. Stay tuned for the information on the deer season kickoff. Contact your state representatives, tell them the roadless rule needs to stay in place. And last but not least, have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Thanks, guys. That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, Lone Wolf Custom Gear, Onyx Hunt, Huntworth Gear, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands that support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other awesome outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.